Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter Trusted Pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter Trusted Pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Welcome in, everyone, to Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And on this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores. And today we're going to be talking about the war in Ukraine, of course, because Vladimir Putin just got a message from Donald Trump, and it is to end this war. This is, of course, not going to make Vladimir Zelensky very, very happy. And we're the warmongers in Washington, D.C. right now scrambling, I think, to figure out how they can perpetuate this this massive war, which has taken the lives of maybe 800,000 Ukrainians, countless Russians. We don't have a total on that side, but absolutely devastating. So we're going to talk about that in just moments.
We're also going to talk about the freedom of Ross Ulbricht. This was a libertarian promise that Donald Trump had made, a deal with them. And in fact, it happened. It's always a little bit surprising when politicians keep their promise. So we're going to look at what happened to him, how the Obama administration tortured him, really, and why this is such a big deal in terms of campaign promises. We're also going to, speaking of campaign promise, this is a bit of a Where's Waldo situation. Where is RFK Jr., Clayton? Where's he been?
He's probably pissed off because we just got a big update on vaccines. And two of the individuals that RFK Jr. picked to be a part of his vaccine advisory team just got booted. Like, what the heck is going on? And is this all a push for this new mRNA technology that was rolled out yesterday at the White House during this press conference? But yeah, where the heck is RFK Jr.? We're going to talk about that today on the show.
Plus, Hollywood saying, hey, we're here to work with President Trump. We really respect him now. We're good. We want to, you know, he's here to help our business. We're all for that. That's interesting, right? This turn of event as Hollywood actively campaigned against him, but now they're actually listening to what he has to say and saying, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Actually, there's things we don't hate there. So that's, yeah, let's look into that.
So we've got a lot to get to today on your Wednesday. Welcome in, everyone. Thank you guys so much for subscribing. It's free to subscribe. We stream live on YouTube. We're on Beck Television, live streaming, of course, on broadcast television, as well as Rumble and X and Twitch and all of these different platforms. So you can subscribe for free. So thank you guys so much for doing that. We're going to get to all the news here in a second. But first, I do want to mention we have a store. It is the Redacted store, and it's built on Shopify. So if you go to shopify.com/redacted, you can take advantage of the incredible sign up for a 1 month trial period just to launch your business. You know, maybe you've had an idea for many, many months. This is the time to do it. Let's do this now. Now is the time. Okay. It's January. It's freezing outside. They got snow in Florida for crying out loud. It is time right now to think about launching your business, the thing of your dreams. And you know what? We've built our entire Redacted store on Shopify. So it's a new year, 2025, you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? Shopify can help you do that. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding, design skills required. All you need to know is how to drag and drop something. It's that simple. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all of your channels, create shoppable posts, and help you sell everything to people everywhere. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with the details like shipping, taxes, payments, and one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on one thing, which is just the important stuff, like growing your business. So right now, go to shopify.com/redacted, shopify.com/redacted. Just sign up for a 1 month trial period today. Again, that's shopify.com/redacted. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. Great to see everyone. Let us know where you're joining us from around the world. Yes, we are live, if you're wondering if we're live right now. Paul Fredrickson in our chat says, screw Hollyweird. And Christine Peach says, what the heck did Trump do? I'm sorry, I'm going to take out my headphones because I keep getting a mixed minus in my ear. So I'm hearing myself back. So I'm going to take out my headphones for now. So let's get into the news, shall we? So President Donald Trump has just issued an ultimatum to Russian President Putin. It's time for peace right now. And the warmongers in Congress and Ukraine are pissed off. So we'll have more on Zelensky's response here in a minute. First, President Trump sent a message to Putin a few hours ago telling him to come to the peace table or he will impose vicious sanctions on Russia, the likes of which he's never seen before, which is pretty ominous warning from the Trump team. This is something, of course, that President Biden didn't do. He didn't do it all, never pushed Putin towards the peace table, even though Putin repeatedly said they wanted to talk peace over and over again. In fact, the Biden administration and Boris Johnson stopped peace talks, destroyed the peace agreement in 2022, you'll recall. And they basically was already signed. Of course, President Putin, Zelensky had an agreement in place. And if you look at that agreement, what's stunning about it is that a huge swath of land that Russia now controls wouldn't have been under Russian control back in 2022. Huge pieces of land in eastern Ukraine, where ethnic Russians had lived for years, which were under constant bombardment and a genocide, would have actually reverted to Ukraine. Now that's off the table because they scuttled this entire peace agreement in 2022. Biden only ever presented Russia with two options: fight to the death or surrender immediately. And Putin was never going to do either of those things. Why would he? Since 2014, the Obama administration and the CIA-backed coup that took over Ukraine in 2014 and set up multiple CIA field offices all over Ukraine, it is a de facto proxy state for the CIA in Ukraine to roll out digital IDs, to do everything that they wanted to do, bio labs there, baby-making factories, oh yeah, baby-making factories in Ukraine. Ukraine being one of the number one exporters of babies in the world, and baby parts. Disgusting. That's your CIA for you in Ukraine. So the Obama CIA team helped Ukraine carry out a genocide against ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. So surrender immediately was like the only response from the Obama team and the Biden team. It was never an option for Putin and Russia. Now, another stunning development this morning from Trump on the war in Ukraine. Ukraine is pissed this morning when they learned that Trump just halted any weapons or arms being sent to Ukraine. Uh-oh. Sorry, all your weapons are cut off now. The only reason this war was continuing at all is because the Biden administration kept sending weapons and ammunition to Ukraine. The teat is about to dry up. No more teats. No more teats of milk flowing with American weapons into Ukraine. That stopped, according to the Kiev Post. Yes, Ukrainian journalists confirming today that all shipments of weapons and military equipment to Ukraine have stopped at NATO bases in Europe. According to preliminary estimates right now, we're talking about several thousand tons of weapons, according to Megatron on X, and military equipment stopped. Sorry, Ukraine. It's all dried up. Here's the Kiev Post. All Pentagon officials, and this is a huge other piece of the story, even more stunning, all Pentagon employees involved in arms supplies to Kiev have been fired or suspended. And President Trump has put in place a large-scale audit of the missiles, of the misuse of funds for aid to Ukraine.
Wow. It's really too late that we can't have Victoria Nuland still in that job so that we could fire her.
Well, forget firing her. Lock her up.
Yes, like that.
Yeah, she's a criminal, a warmongering criminal. We should lock up Victoria Nuland. So she's still floating around there. Maybe you can arrest her.
No, she's not. She's now at the non-governmental organization. So
well, I mean,
she's
not in... Yeah, but I mean, she's still floating around.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The fingers of her... The fingerprints of her her time there is still blaring if you just take some fingerprint dust.
So on top of all that, we actually have new Secretary of State Marco Rubio saying that the war in Ukraine must stop right now. So, okay, you know, we were down on Marco Rubio as a choice. Of course, he is a bit of a warmonger. So the fact that he's saying we need to end, I think he's towing the company line, towing President Trump's wishes to end this war. He says we need to stop this war right now.
Well, I'm also a little concerned because, you know, liberals love to talk about how Trump is under the thumb of Vladimir Putin, despite copious amounts of U.S. dollars, tax dollars through the U.S. Justice Department, looking into how that works. But in his post this morning on Truth Social, Donald Trump said, "I'm not looking to hurt Russia. I love the Russian people and I've always had a good relationship with Putin." And this despite Russia's radical left Russia's Russia hoax, all of that. He's addressing that, right? And he's saying, that being said, now is the time to come to the table. Now is the time for us to make a deal. He says it's only going to get worse. And as Clayton said, he's using his leverage of taxes, tariffs, and sanctions on everything being sold by Russia to the United States. Now, the Biden administration did try sanctions, has been doing so for the last 2 years in a way that has hurt the rest of us. So how the question remains, how can Trump do this in a way the Biden administration did not? Because the Biden administration did try to sanction Europe, try to sanction Russia to get this to stop and were not able to do it. But they also had no direct lines of communications with which President Putin has said he's ready for at any given moment.
Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Zelensky is asking today for U.S. troops to be sent to the front lines in the war with Russia. During the Biden administration, Zelensky, of course, repeatedly promised that Ukraine could fight the war on their own terms as long as NATO allies sent weapons. Just keep us going with the weapons. We've got plenty of men. You know, we'll get 80-year-olds. We'll get people with Down syndrome, which they did. We'll get people who are
pregnant women. They like that.
We'll grab everybody we can off of our streets in Ukraine. So just keep sending us weapons. We'll kill off everyone in our country. We don't care.
And what a deal.
So now President Zelensky, he's doubled down on this. He's asked repeatedly for U.S. involvement. Now he's asking, now that President Trump has basically paused all foreign aid, now he wants U.S. troops to go to the front lines in Ukraine. He said these troops will not be just sitting in cushy, nice cities like in the center of big cities, relaxed. Those are his words. And instead, they'll be put on the front lines. So he wants U.S. troops to go to the front lines. Watch.
It is great if we will have troops. But we have to understand that the troops will not be in the center of the capital.
Yes.
They will not have relaxed time. Yes, it's very important because I heard that some allies said that, yes, but it's okay, we can be in the center of some city. And then, no, we don't need such contingent.
You want the front line?
Yes, with our people, of course. Yes, because this means security, and that's it. So, but it can't be. It can't be without the United States. I will explain to you why. Even if some European friends think that it can be, no, it will not be. Mm. First of all, nobody will risk without the United States. The second, that what can divide NATO, divide EU and USA. That is a goal and dream of Putin, to divide this unity.
He's odious. Also, recall that he told us many times that he does not need U.S. troop presence. He only wanted the weapons because Ukraine had the wherewithal to use those weapons by themselves. He promised us that at the very last time he addressed U.S. Congress. He said he did not need U.S. presence. Why is he saying this now? And why is he saying that our U.S. troops cannot have a relaxed time? They cannot go there and have it easy. He himself calls for them to be put through the ringer. Who the hell is he to to say this.
Also, his wife just took a nice cushy ski vacation about a week ago, caught on camera, going and enjoying, you know, a beautiful ski vacation, mountain villa and everything, caught at a private airport, taking private flights. And so being funded by you, of course, that's
what's
happening.
Oh, she can relax. She can have a relaxing time.
She could also take some of that money. She was also seen, what, in France, like on a spending spree in Paris, you know, buying expensive clothes and bags and everything else. So this is not a surprising. Also, Ukraine's chief army psychologist was just arrested last night on charges of stealing $1 million in your taxpayer dollars, both from the United States and the European Union, of course. $1 million stolen. He bought apartment buildings. He had three apartment buildings. He bought additional land. He bought BMWs. And he was found with $150,000 in his house in piles of cash. Take a look at this. Yeah, this is it. There he is. Chief Army psychiatrist. $150,000 in piles of cash.
U.S. dollars he had. You guys, where do you think he got those?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at the picture, and I think I recognize some of those are my tax dollars. I recognize some of those bills. I've seen them.
You recognize the serial numbers?
Yeah.
It must be nice. It must be nice for all of those corrupt politicians over there to be living off the backs of American, you know, and they get $700 in North Carolina after their homes
are destroyed. I believe he had, what is the number here? Three BMWs? Oh, so it says several BMWs. Now,
yeah, three apartment buildings.
Right. During previous regimes, previous administrations in Ukraine, it was reported that a government salary cannot even buy one BMW. So they had wondered. It's been obviously the most corrupt country in Europe for decades now. So anyone who had a BMW, you would wonder on a government salary where that came from if they did not come from legacy wealth.
Someone in the chat just says, average gamer. Gaming says, you all think Putin is scared of Trump? I don't think he's scared of Trump. I think he respects Trump. And I think Trump respects Putin. And I think Trump hates Zelensky. And I know that J.D. Vance hates Zelensky. So I think what's being played right now is very interesting. And look, like this idea that you're going to sanction Putin even more than he's already been sanctioned. Like, okay, I don't think he's really scared about that. But this is Putin's way of, Putin has wanted to come to the peace table multiple times and has asked for it. And the Biden administration never went along with it, totally ignored it, and in fact scuttled the peace agreement. So I don't know that I don't think he's scared of Trump at all, but he certainly respects him from a negotiating standpoint.
And I think the wording of this post on Truth Social gives them both enough leeway to come to the table with their full pride intact, which is important when it comes to, because they are leaders. And so because Vladimir Putin enjoys such massive support in Russia, he can't just grovel to the United States and not lose politically. And the same goes for Donald Trump. He cannot, you know, they both have, optics matter in this. So that's the end of the point.
That's right.
That's
all right. Let's talk
about
this. So libertarians just got a huge victory yesterday, thanks to President Trump.
Yes, they did. In fact, libertarians and Republicans alike, like Congressman Thomas Massey and the Libertarian Party, have been pushing President Trump to pardon Silk Road founder Ross Ulbricht, and it happened. Now, President Trump is making good on his pardon to pardon Ross Ulbricht, and this was a deal he made during the campaign with libertarian supporters. He had to keep this promise. It still very much surprises me to see a politician keep their promises, though. This picture here, I've stared at it at length. It's a lot, to me, feels like the Julian Assange release, where I'm like, I need to see him hug his mom. I need to see him eat a burrito. I need to see him order something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When we're watching these human interest stories, he's 40 years old now. He went to prison just a little after his 30th birthday. He's a man. He went in there almost a boy. Here is the Trump pardon. Oh, I don't believe we have a screen, so I'll read it to you. It said that he just called his mother to let her know that he pardoned her son, which because on behalf of the libertarian movement, which supported me so strongly, and it was his pleasure to do so. He says the scum that worked to convict him were the some of the same lunatics who were involved in the modern day weaponization of government against me. He was given two life sentences plus 40 years, which was ridiculous. Now, he was arrested at a San Francisco library in 2013 by an FBI sting, where two agents started a fight behind him to distract him. And then they grabbed his laptop in front of him. Had he closed the laptop, his information would have been
blocked. I mean, you would have needed like a password in that moment to get in.
It would have been encrypted. I'm sorry, is the word that I'm looking for. So what they wanted was information about Silk Road, which was a Bitcoin marketplace where some, but not all, people sold contraband. Federal prosecutors also accused him of plotting a murder, but the victim himself has said he didn't think that it was Ulbricht who did that. The government's case was, let's just say, not rock solid. But here is CNN saying he's a very dangerous person that Trump just pardoned.
He also, a short time ago, announced a pardon for Ross William Ulbricht, who is this guy. He had this drug marketplace, Silk Road. The president, explaining the pardon, said, quote, "The scum that worked to convict him were some of the same lunatics who were involved in the modern-day weaponization of government against me." You're a former federal prosecutor. What do you think a DOJ remade in the image that Trump would like it to be, it looks like?
Well, my former office, the Southern District of New York, is the one that tried and convicted Ross Ulbricht, the scum, quote unquote, that he's referring to there, just so people understand who this guy is.
Right. By the way, the scum is not the man convicted of this.
No, right. Trump is referring to the SDNY prosecutors as the scum. Let me tell you who the other guy is, Ross Ulbricht. He ran a website called Silk Road. If you've ever been, well, everyone's been on Amazon. The way you would go on Amazon and order soap or a book, people go on Silk Road and order hundreds of millions of dollars of drugs, of hacking activities. Also, it was a marketplace for crime. And he was tried to a jury. He was convicted on all counts. The judge sentenced him to life. And now he is out for this purely, almost overtly political rationale by Donald Trump. I think it completely undermines what DOJ is all about. And he's letting go a very dangerous individual.
He's also fulfilling a campaign promise. He went to the Libertarian Party convention. They are for drug legalization. They wanted him released. And so he's following through.
Okay, why? That's not true. By that definition, according to CNN's definition of contraband being bought and sold by some type of marketplace, well, then every checking account provider is dangerous because Hunter Biden paid for sex with checks, right? It doesn't check out, really, pun intended. The reason libertarians believe in the Silk Road is because they think if you buy something with Bitcoin and make that transaction more secure, people are going to do what they're going to do, but we make it safer so that you don't actually get your goods until it's paid for with Bitcoin. So there's less cartel violence. There's less power in the hands of the cartel. He was facilitating a safer marketplace. And that's, he was a student of Austrian economics. He just, so that's why libertarians really rally around Silk Road and his case. And most of them believe that he was prosecuted by the Obama Justice Department to be used as an example because the Bitcoin marketplace was something the U.S. government could not control or track or tax. And it was taking power out of the hands of the government. Albert's lawyer said that he tried to make a plea deal, but the government denies that he ever made such offerings. He was sentenced again to two life sentences plus 40 years without the possibility of parole, which convicted murderers and rapists get, where there's actual proof of a murder and a rape, get smaller sentences than that. So the question is, what is to become of him now that he's 40 years old and been in prison for a decade? While he's in prison, he earned himself a bachelor's in computer science in the prison university project. He has been in contact a lot with Rand Paul and Thomas Massie. Here is Thomas Massie reading a letter that he received from Ulbricht, where he says that when he gets out, he will work to further the cause of freedom. Listen.
A letter that Ross wrote me on December 14th of this year, and his mom, Lynn, gave this to me. And I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this because it's personal, but it brought a tear to my eye. "Mr. Massie, Inauguration Day fast approaches, and my hopes are running high that our new president will quickly put an end to my incarceration once he is sworn in. As I await the beginning of my new life in freedom, I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for your part in bringing about this wonderful outcome. You have consistently been a powerful voice in the public sphere, supporting my campaign for freedom. So my imminent release is as much a victory for you as it is for me and my family. Thank you for every single time you supported me, both publicly and in private. You put your faith and confidence in me. And now that I'm getting my second chance, I promise to make you proud that you did. I would love to connect with you once I am on the other side of these walls to see how I can help further the cause of freedom. So he's already thinking about what he can do. I know Josie's crying. I cried when I read this. I've read it twice, practiced it without, this is the first time I've been able to read it without crying. Because this is, like you were saying, Tim, this is a personal example of how an election matters, down to somebody who was going to rot in prison, was rotting in prison. And by the way, Ross, he didn't even, he was willing to settle for less than what Trump gave him. He was willing to settle to have his sentence commuted, which means you're basically guilty, an admission of guilt, but you, your sentence is over. You've served enough time. And it was a ridiculous over sentencing, regardless of the guilt or not. I think it's a violation of the Eighth Amendment. Eighth Amendment to our Constitution says no cruel or unusual punishment. Why should you get two life sentences plus 40 years?
Well, explain what he's what was he accused of doing?
Running a website that allowed people to buy and sell drugs, for instance, using Bitcoin. I think they made an example out of him because they didn't want people using Bitcoin. And now it's far more mainstream, but I think that's one of the reasons they did it.
But I think we should clarify, I guess, the website allowed people to buy and trade. What people did with it after the fact was what the people did with it.
Well, MasterCard lets you pay for prostitutes, right?
So, again, it's the same point. Hunter Biden used checkbook to buy sex.
Right.
And so then should every checking account provider get these unusual sentences? Clearly, he was made an example of. I very much want to see more of him when he is good and ready.
Yeah.
He doesn't owe it to us to let him see us safe, but I feel like I need that.
10 years, I mean, it's unbelievable.
My takeaway is I'm not using my financial tools to their full extent, I guess, because that's not what I use checks or my credit card for.
Don't you?
No.
It's none of my business.
It's America. I saw someone in the chat just a few minutes ago talking about drugs. It's like, if the earth made it, then it's free. Like, if the earth made it, then we have a right to it. And so to put a guy away think about the murderers that get off scot-free. Think about the illegal immigrants that don't even get held. He gets two life sentences plus 40 years.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So, yeah, we'll continue to watch
that
story.
Think about this. The man...
And by the way, I sent a message to Congressman Massey today, and I said, thanks for your work on this. So, he was really behind the scenes working on this for years.
Yeah.
So...
All right. You can think about something else. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about possible AI vaccines with mRNA to go in your body and target any possible cancer. Raise your hand. If you voted for that, do you want that? Seek and destroy?
No, and like, what is Bill Gates doing with Trump right now? Like, a lot of shadiness going on with Larry Ellison, Bill Gates. We're going to unpack this in just a second.
Do you ever see the movie Interspace, you guys?
Yes.
This is what came to mind, is like a little AI machine in your...
A little Larry Ellison injected into your body?
I don't want that.
Yeah. Zooming around inside of your body?
By the way, we have showed our kids that movie, and they really liked it. That's a classic, Interspace, so... That's something you could think about while I tell you about our show sponsor, which is Ramp. Now, if your New Year's resolutions are to grow your business and your personal finances, you need to look into Ramp. Ramp will help you simplify your business finances all in one place. You can close your books right as the month end. That's something that gets me very excited. I have a bank account that doesn't give me a statement until the 6th of the month, and I find that so unacceptable. If you are like me and you want a handle on your finances, you want to know how your month went, you want to know where your spend is going, you want to control that spend, issue company cards and set limits, get alerts to what your employees are doing with those cards. Well, you can do all of that in one place with Ramp. It doesn't look like that, a stack of unorganized receipts that gives me anxiety. Instead, it looks like that. Beautiful charts. knowledge, empowerment, all of that stuff. So you can get $250 when you join RAMP. Go to ramp.com/redacted. One more time, that's ramp.com/redacted. Optimize your business finances, get control of your business, grow your business in the year 2025. ramp.com/redacted.
Well, President Trump has some explaining to do. Why the hell is he getting cozy with Bill Gates? And why the hell is he backing an mRNA vaccine and surveillance project at the White House? A lot to unpack here. So first, on the Bill Gates piece of the story, Gates, easily one of the most evil men on the face of the planet, recently traveled to Mar-a-Lago and had a meeting with Donald Trump. They had a three-hour dinner, according to Gates, where he says they discussed, quote, global health. Remember, Gates isn't a doctor. He steals software from people and puts his name on it. He was caught having dinners with Jeffrey Epstein. He's not a doctor. Why the hell is he sitting down with President Trump for 3 hours? He makes billions of dollars off of these vaccines pushed on populations around the world, specifically in Africa.
Wait. This dinner happened since the inauguration? This three-hour dinner?
It happened right before the inauguration.
Okay, all right. This is, for whatever reason, an important distinction to me.
Yeah. So remember, Gates isn't a doctor. He makes billions of dollars off of these vaccines pushed on these populations around the world, specifically in Africa, low-income areas, unwitting populations that don't have access to the internet and social media where they can jump on and say, hey, my mom died of this thing that Bill Gates was handing around in our village here.
You're fine.
Then suddenly Trump, after this meeting, Trump suddenly pulls out of the World Health Organization, which I'm all for it, which is the same thing, though, that he did back in 2020. Back then, though, Trump then turned around and gave billions of dollars to Gates through his Gavi Foundation, G-A-V-I, which is Gates Vaccine Alliance, which pushes vaccines in low-income countries, again, all over the continent of Africa. So then today we learned that two of RFK Jr.'s picks to head up his vaccine safety board were kicked out. Who kicked them out? RFK Jr. had picked two individuals to be a part of his vaccine safety board under the Department of Health and Human Services, which he will invariably head up, it seems. But now they're kicked out. So RFK Jr. chose Stephanie Spear and Aaron Seary to sit on Kennedy's vaccine safety board. They are renowned for their unwavering commitment to revealing the truth about vaccine side effects, particularly the childhood vaccine schedule. So after this meeting with Gates, suddenly the Trump transition team has sidelined these two key figures, which focuses on spreading vaccine truth and transparency. Well, according to reports overnight, they were reportedly stripped of their advisory roles because of their positions on vaccine safety. Okay, I have a lot of questions here. This comes right after Bill Gates met with Trump. We need answers on this. What did Gates promise Trump, if anything? Why do these people get pushed off the board of advisories? RFK chose these people. Why did Trump or his team remove them after meeting with Gates? To me, the removal of Stephanie Spear and Aaron Seary represents a big setback on vaccine safety policy. Again, just so you understand, they collaborated closely with Robert Kennedy, specifically on child vaccine schedule. And that's one of the big things that RFK Jr. has been talking about extensively, is this vaccine schedule that, like, when he was a child, there was like two or three vaccines. Now we've got like, what, 30, 40 of them on this childhood vaccine schedule. And of course, the adverse effects of certain vaccines and COVID vaccines and all of this. So he was working with these individuals. Why did they get yanked off these advisory board role? I don't know.
Right. And think of how many people voted for Trump because of the alignment with RFK Jr. You cannot betray the power that was promised to this person at this point. It would be huge in the very first week. People are wondering, where is he? We didn't see images of him at the Maha Ball post-inauguration.
Well, he was at the inauguration. He sat right behind Trump.
Right.
He was sat right behind Lauren Sanchez's boobs. and Zuckerberg.
Did he? You know exactly.
I knew exactly where the open boobs were.
That's your beacon point for who sat where.
It's like a beacon of hope in the world.
Okay.
Like a lighthouse in the fog, mm-hmm. if you will. And you're right. So Rain Hazelton here in our chat says RFK is the only reason I voted for Trump. Christine Miller says I love RFK. And exactly. And of course, yeah. And someone says, just ask Whitney. Well, exactly. I mean, Whitney Webb has been all over this. And she's going to join us next week on the show. She messaged me today. She's publishing a big piece that's not out yet. So we're going to have her on the show next week.
I mean, one of the things he said was that on January 20th, 2025, which was 2 days ago, that the United States government would make an advisory notice that fluoride should not be put in any municipal water. That's 48 hours late. I'm waiting for that. So, you know, these are some things that we're just worried has his influence and promise slipped at this point.
And well, maybe RFK is just sitting back. Hey, it's President Trump's moment. Like, I don't need to get out and, you know, make, because none of these people are really, other than Tom Holman, really going out on television and making speeches right now.
Trump's moment. It's our moment for the things that we voted for. And we have.
But if you are a part of an administration, by the way, he hasn't even been confirmed yet as head of HHS. So he's still awaiting. We know internally there's been a moratorium on interviews. So you're not going to see Pam Bondi doing interviews. You're not seeing these other cabinet picks doing any kind of interviews right now. They've basically said no interviews until they're like basically confirmed by the Senate. Mm-hmm. So they've been on lockdown. Border czar Tom Holman doesn't need a Senate confirmation. And he's been out all over television, of course, mm-hmm. going on the border policies they've unfolded over the last 48 hours. But yeah, RFK Jr. has been quiet. He was at the inauguration. But I want answers. And if we have a chance to sit down with RFK Jr. after he's confirmed, I would love to know why these people were kicked off the advisory board. Will he tell us the truth about it? Anyway, that's one piece of this story. But we're not done. Yesterday, something very strange happened. President Trump invited OpenAI CEO Sam Altman, Oracle Chairman Larry Ellison, SoftBank CEO Masayoshi Son to the White House to push the benefits of mRNA vaccines that use AI to detect cancers, basically rolling out Operation Warp Speed 2.0, if you will. They didn't call it that. They called it the Stargate Project, where Trump says they'll pull together. These companies are going to pull together between $100 billion and $500 billion. And of course, they'll get the blessing of the government. No word on how much government money would be involved in this. And it'll start with a massive data center in Texas, of course, where they'll sort of catalog and I guess surveil all of our gene sequences using AI somehow, the sort of big data center in Texas. So every American gets scanned, you know, into Larry Ellison from Oracle, his database, and it'll all live in Texas and everything will be cataloged and they'll develop mRNA vaccines specifically for you, John, and you, Nancy. We'll know exactly how to go after it. We'll construct an mRNA vaccine that will attack and go after you and protect you. A lot of Trump supporters, of course, despised Operation Warp Speed, which pushed COVID vaccines on Americans. So this is not something many of us like at all. Remember, Larry Ellison has ties to the CIA. In fact, Oracle wouldn't exist without the CIA in the 1970s. Their first client was the CIA. There's a lot of that going around. Google wouldn't exist. CIA helped a lot of these people get off the ground. And it was called Project Oracle at the time, build a CIA database. So they're very, very cushy. So now he's going to cure your cancer? An mRNA, just so you understand, an mRNA vaccine uses a molecule called a messenger RNA to instruct cells in the body to produce a protein. The response then helps the immune system recognize the protein as a foreign body, starts to then produce antibodies to attack it. At least that's the promise of it, right? But add in the idea that every American would then be AI scanned, artificially intelligence scanned, so that people like Sam Altman at OpenAI have our entire genetic sequence. And then you add in all of these other pieces from these tech CEOs, and then this shit is pretty scary. Listen to Oracle's Larry Ellison explain some of this.
Once we gene sequence that cancer tumor, you can then vaccinate the person, design a vaccine for every individual person to vaccinate them against that cancer. And you can make that vaccine, that mRNA vaccine, you can make that robotically, again, using AI in about 48 hours. So imagine early cancer detection, the development of a cancer vaccine for your particular cancer aimed at you, and have that vaccine available in 48 hours. This is the promise of AI and the promise of the future.
You can promise that to yourself.
Right. You could take that and shove it. So personalized mRNA. Yeah. Where everyone is scanned and tech companies control everything we do. No thanks. Go ahead, Philip.
Well, I'm just confused by the name Stargate Project. Like, that's such a bizarre name for what is essentially like a genetic project. Like, the Stargate thing just seems weird to me. Like, I'm like hung up on that. Like, why Stargate?
Well, it encompasses other things. So if you go to the OpenAI site where they say announcing Stargate, it's not only for health and genes. It talks about a collaborative computing system between NVIDIA, the chip maker, and Oracle and OpenAI. It also has a partnership with Microsoft.
So Bill Gates involved.
Right. And so they're actually talking about how they can use it for all of humanity. It's not just for health. This is just one application, one dystopic application.
Well, and think about, like, there's already a bunch of natural solutions out there for cancer. Now, if they're going to put this out with like an emergency use or something, they're going to now be able to block and downplay all the natural things that are out there that can help, you know, so it's just
right.
Another.
Well, and
someone in our chat says the body does this naturally.
Right. That's a good point. There are certain cancers that you will get. For instance, most men get prostate cancer? Something like 90% of them will get, if they live to a certain age, I believe that's the data, and they don't die from it. It's just something that most men eventually develop for whatever reason. And so you could be taking something that, you know, to combat something that would not otherwise kill you. And so why would you do that? Now, here is my biggest fear about this technology existing. What if this blood test becomes mandated by your insurance company, or else they will deny you coverage? And what if then your insurance could cancel you if you refused said vaccine because they see it now? They see this potential. You won't take the vaccine. Then they think you're going to get cancer, and they say, well, we can't pay for the eventuality. So
that's
you have no choice
but
to do it.
I mean, it's basically,
yes.
This is basically
yeah.
the
yeah,
plot
yeah, that's
of
exactly
Gattaca.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm putting that on our list of movies to show our
kids. That's a great movie. So many people in our chat said, this is Gattaca, so you're not alone in that. So anyway, Robert Malone, you know Robert Malone. David, give a background of Dr. Robert Malone. Didn't he actually create the technology behind mRNA? If I'm not mistaken. Here's Dr. Robert Malone. Here's what he had to say about it. He said, these people have no idea how complicated the immune system is, and they have no understanding of the difficulties facing predictive computational immunology, and they have no understanding of cancer immunology. This is marketing propaganda and hype. So it really was a propaganda press conference. Trump and MAGA supporters are not happy about this, as you can imagine. Here's a Trump supporter, Sovereign Bra, says Donald Trump will lose his base if he supports more mRNA vaccines. Mark my words. Here's Justin Amash, libertarian, who was in Congress. He said this: the Stargate Project sounds like the stuff of dystopian nightmares. A U.S. government announced partnership of mega corporations to protect the national security of America and its allies and harness AGI for the benefit of all humanity. Let's maybe take a beat here, he says. And then health expert and whistleblower Kelly Means said this about it. Kelly Means, so, you know, he's talking about the natural side of this. He said a couple of thoughts on Ellison's comments here. Rates of cancer and nearly every other chronic disease are going up among children because we are poisoning them, not because we don't have enough drugs.
So, he talks about President Trump's promise to end the chronic disease epidemic and keep our children safe. He talks about the only way to reverse this is not to seek it out after you get cancer. It's to stop poisoning each other, ourselves, so that we stop getting cancer. I mean, really, prevention is the only way to go about this, not go in and send, again, the way I see it is like inner space, is send these little AI bots into our bloodstream. No, thank you.
Now, you'll remember Larry Ellison is the one who said that citizens, he's been pushing for a digital ID for years, Larry Ellison has, so that we would all be tracked and monitored using a digital ID. So he loves surveillance, and he loves this idea of AI, I think, as like a Trojan horse to lead us into a surveillance state. So remember, he was the one who said that citizens will be on their best behavior. Those are his words. When we have an AI surveillance system deployed across the United States to watch everything you do, watch.
The police will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And it's unimpeachable. The cars have camera, you know, cameras on them. We have a squad car here someplace. But those kind of applications using AI, if we can use AI, and we're using AI to monitor the video. So if that altercation had occurred, that occurred in Memphis, the chief of police would be immediately notified. It's not people that are looking at those cameras, it's AI that's looking at the cameras. No, 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 you can't do this. It would be like a shooting. That's going to be an event that's immediately, an alarm's going to go off, we're going to have supervision. In other words, every police officer is going to be supervised at all times. And the supervision will, and if there's a problem, AI will report the problem and report it to the appropriate person, whether it's the sheriff or the chief or whomever we need to take control of the situation. We have, same thing, we have drones. If there's something going on in a shopping center, and I'll stop, a drone goes out there, get there way faster than a police car. There's no reason for, by the way, high-speed chases. You shouldn't have high-speed chases between cars. You just have a drone follow the car. I mean, it's very, very simple. And the new generation of autonomous drones.
Yeah. So
I'll citizens, stop, he says, because I probably have gone too far down the plot of 1984.
Citizens will be on their best behavior with AI surveillance deployed across the United States.
If you look at the WEF, where they were talking about AI in an office being able to predict like worker behavior and potential problems, like if you mix those two things together, we are now looking at pre-crime. We're looking at AI, looking at somebody's behavior, predicting that they're probably a criminal, and then alerting the authorities.
Right. And then this goes on some sort of permanent record of some individual, and if they try to apply for a job or go to college or some other issue down the line, some of this is probably in some sort of a database somewhere that's keeping them from, you know, sort of a social credit score. I mean, this is the great fear, right? That you won't be able to get insurance. You won't be able to get a mortgage on a home because you have all of these like AI blemishes on your record.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is where we're heading. And this is the big concern, of course, at the border, too, like biometric scanning for people coming in and out of the United States and all of this stuff. So I think we need to be very, very weary of this stuff. And we see these press conferences, like, who the heck, we need to say no to this, and we need to tell President Trump, like, absolutely not.
I have not seen one person online saying, I love it, sign me up. But that's
either.
Not what the algorithm shows me. So if you see anything like that, please tag me in it. I want to see.
No, and this is where you hold these leaders to account. I mean, you know, President Trump is not Jesus. I know that there are some people that think he is. He's a human being. And so, you know, he's going to make huge mistakes. I think this is a massive mistake on day two of his administration. And I hope that this gets pulled back and the United States does not put any tax dollars behind this. And I want to know what the hell's going on with RFK Jr. and these cushy relationship with Bill Gates. We need answers on that. So we'll follow the story. We're not going away from that story.
All right. Well, Variety, the magazine that's all about entertainment and Hollywood, says that Hollywood is ready to work with President Trump. Here is that headline. How in the world are we supposed to buy this when every big name in Hollywood campaigned against him and for Kamala Harris because they told us he was a serious threat? They sat with Oprah. They did webinars, highly produced videos of the Avengers. They spent the entirety of the first term, the Trump administration, opposing them. People made themselves big names by opposing him. Mark Hamill, Stephen King. So now they have their tail between their legs. why. Clayton doesn't like when I do this, but I mean, I think it's hypocritical if I don't say, sure, I hated Trump during the first administration too. I'm not coming around on Trump because I love him. I can now hear what he says and decide if I like it or if I don't. If you have Trump derangement syndrome, you hate every word out of his mouth, which is what Hollywood has. I don't have Trump derangement syndrome. I can hear for myself now because I've been trained to hear that the media is lying. That's the difference. So now Hollywood is saying they're coming around on Trump, not just because they know it's bad for their business and, you know, we don't want to hear them droning on from the Capitol about things that we don't relate to, but because it suddenly works for him, for them. Their policies now work for Hollywood. Here's how Variety reports it, that for some, a return to 2020 before COVID and strikes and wildfires would be welcome. Why is that? What they're implying here is because the Biden administration has hurt their business too. They suffered too. They don't want to admit it. They never admitted it to us, but it's been horrible for the movie industry. It says members of the union, mostly left-wing contingents, are privately expressing hope that the president's planned tariff on imports may cover runaway production, thus creating an incentive to film once again in Atlanta or Los Angeles. One prolific indie film producer says he doesn't care for Trump's politics, but he admits it's refreshing to hear the office of the president focus on how we can get the movie business back on track and back in Los Angeles, implying the Biden administration sucked for them. Also, we have Clayton and I have a friend who's a movie producer and had said during the early Biden years, no white guy could get a job in Hollywood because they wanted the optics of not hiring white people. But then productions would be delayed. They wouldn't have the same quality of work because they were not hiring based on experience.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you're a black guy? You're a black guy? You've
never no experience?
You've never directed a film before and you don't know what you're doing? You're hired. And then when the film sucked...
Well, not just sucked, but they couldn't run on time. They couldn't hire the people they needed to do.
The director didn't know what they were. Yeah, it matters a lot. And so they're like, okay, we tried this experiment. We're going to go back to merit. Merit-based. You might be black and great. Right. You might be white and great. If you've got merit, then you're hired. Like, that's how it went.
It was not just that the economy was bad. These productions were incentivized to film abroad. And also, they didn't have experienced people because they were so focused on DEI. And guess what? That was bad for business. So now they're coming back around. And so here is what this film producer said to Variety. This producer made a film released last year chronicling historical events in LA. And he said, we had to shoot the whole thing in Bulgaria. A film about LA. They couldn't even film in LA, which is the hub of entertainment. They had to go to Bulgaria and he had to sleep in a stinky hotel and not the house I worked my entire life to buy. He says, you didn't hear the Biden administration talking about how to help us at all. So even though they were allied with the Biden administration, they knew he actually wasn't representing working people of any industry, including the movie industry. So is it that? That they're like, oh, actually, business could be good again. That's interesting. Or is it that they lost the culture war, as the Los Angeles Times points out, because people don't want to be lectured by Hollywood elites? Their audience doesn't want to hear that, and that's bad for them. They lose followers. Again, to draw from the Hunger Games, they live in the Capitol. They don't know anything about people who live in the districts, and yet they're telling them what their lives should be. Vanity Fair paints this as Hollywood just doesn't have the energy anymore to resist Trump. Look at the image, the not so subtle image of the Trump administration being equated with the Handmaid's Tale, as if the reality is that only Hollywood could prevent us all from going back to the Handmaid's Tale. How self-aggrandizing. Of course, they could just be trying to learn from the failure of their influence. They could be trying to actually see what working class people care about, what's good for all of us, given that if you live in LA, you live with rampant crime, homelessness, wildfires now, lack of infrastructure. But they're not actually saying that. Instead, most of them are just saying nothing. As the Hollywood Reporter points out, is they're just kind of like, huh, what's happening here? They don't know what went wrong. They don't know what the problem is. So what do you think? Will a disastrous failed state in California make a change or change the national attitude? You know, they'll realize, oh, people like law and order. People like girls to not have to be naked in front of boys. People want health in our society. People want infrastructure that works. They want a police department that can put out fires with water That's interesting. Are they learning that? Will we now see a less partisan Hollywood? Let us know what you think.
So in our Rumble chat here says, D. Kishball says, I watch all of my old DVDs of old movies because they're far superior than those after 9/11. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Think about that. I know it's like old media is like, you know, it's like old video games, old media. Go back to the 80s, watch that stuff. Now, we watched Trading Places the other day. Imagine them trying to make that movie today.
Yes.
In 2025.
Right.
You know, Dan Aykroyd, Eddie Murphy.
Blazing Saddles. That'd be an interesting one to see them reboot.
Right.
Ooh, adding that to my list. To my mother one. Loves
All my kids
Blazing
will love
Saddles.
The farting beans. Yeah, our kids will love that. They'll find that to be the funniest thing in the world. All right, we've got more news to get to here today because the battle over birthright citizenship. You know, President Trump on day one signed an executive order, of course, banning birthright citizenship in the United States. And liberals freaked out. And you have 22 states right now that have filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration saying, wait a minute, in the 14th Amendment, it says that if you're born here, you get birthright citizenship. You become a citizen of the United States. Not so fast. We're going to talk to Dr. Gavin Clarkson, who served with President Trump, member of the Choctaw Nation, who says, no. They don't have a leg to stand on. We're going to talk to him in just a moment. But first, we want to tell you about Lumen. Yes. So if you're trying to lose fat, get leaner. I am right now. I need to lose about 10 pounds. Listen up. This one's for you. So if you're like me, you're weightlifting, you're getting in your cardio, you're doing it all, but maybe you're off balance about, you know, how to prepare your meals. I know people get so frustrated about this. Well, the reason actually might surprise you. You're doing all of these things, but it's not working. It's most likely has to do with your metabolic flexibility. I've been using Lumen now for the past few weeks to understand how the food I eat fits into the bigger picture of how easily my body shifts from burning carbs or fat for energy. And this is what metabolic flexibility is all about. It's very, very, we can go back to the video in a second here, but it's just like this little device. It's very easy. It's the world's first handheld metabolic coach. You just put it on this little charger and you can sit it right in your bathroom. You just breathe right into it. One breath, first thing in the morning. And Lumen can actually measure your metabolism. It's pretty amazing. It lets you know if you're burning fat or if you're burning carbs, gives you tailored guidance right inside the application to improve your nutrition, workout, sleep, and stress management. No more cookie cutter, one size fits all nutritional plans. Lumen lets you know what's happening in your body in real time and builds you a personalized health plan based on real time data. So this is pretty amazing. It really is amazing to get this tailored approach inside of your own app and see what your levels are, your carb usage, and all of that. So right now, I want you to check it out and go to lumen.me/redacted and get 20% off right now. That's lumen.me/redacted to get 20% off your Lumen today. Well, President Trump shocked the world when he signed an executive order banning birthright citizenship in the United States. Now, of course, almost immediately, 22 states have joined on with a massive lawsuit against the new Trump administration. And it's almost like they had this drafted ahead of time because it seems like, you know, this was all planned. Managed to get that lawsuit right out there and right quick. Joining me now is Gavin Clarkson, former Trump administration deputy assistant secretary, who's written extensively on this and who knows all about this. Nice to see you, Gavin. Welcome into the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me on. And thank you to President Trump for ending the fraud of birthright citizenship by illegal aliens.
So, of course, liberals are freaking out about this. How dare he do this? How dare he block this sort of sacred, a sacred thing that's bestowed upon anyone who just happens to be born in the United States underneath the 14th Amendment. But as you've written, the 14th Amendment doesn't really stand for that at all. Can you explain why that's not the case and what do these lawsuits have any teeth?
Well, just to go back to one thing you said earlier, I actually don't think it was a surprise to the world that he did it. This is a president who makes promises and keeps promises. And he made a promise that he was going to shut down the border. He was going to stop all the fraud at the border. And clearly he's mentioned birthright citizenship in the past. And so I actually expected this to be one of the executive orders on yesterday. And he followed through and kept his promise. But as you correctly point out, not only several Several states have filed suit, but also I believe the ACLU filed suit, and they have no basis in your they have no basis in law. And you'll never hear them talk about the rule of law in these kind of lawsuits because they are wrong. The Supreme Court has opined twice on the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment. And that amendment specifies that, yes, you have to be born or naturalized into the United States, but it adds a qualifier under the jurisdiction thereof. And even though I'm pigmentationally challenged, I am a proud member of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. And although I was born inside the United States, I am not a citizen by birth because Congress passed a law in 1924 to make me a citizen because the Supreme Court had previously ruled in a case called Elk v. Wilkins from 1884, I believe, that you're not in the even though if you're born in the United States, if you are not under the complete jurisdiction of the United States, you're not a citizen. And same thing happened in 1898, a slightly different outcome. There you had two Chinese nationals who were the equivalent of green card holders. They had come here legally, they'd established their residence, and the Supreme Court in that case, called Wong Kim Ark, said that basically, yes, the children of lawful permanent residents are citizens. So in 1917, Congress recognized there were two groups of folks that they needed, that they wanted to have help from in World War I, American Indians and Puerto Ricans. So in 1917, they passed the Puerto Rican Federal Relations Act, which made all Puerto Ricans U.S. citizens. And then in 1924, they passed the Indian Citizenship Act, which made all tribal members U.S. citizens. So in 1929, we had our first ever American Indian vice president, Charles Curtis. 5 years earlier, he could not have run because 5 years earlier, he was not a U.S. citizen because he was a tribal member. And so I'm not saying that Congress can't act to make the children of non-citizens citizens. It's just that they haven't. And they haven't in this case. And so you have this huge problem of people abusing the system. You have there's two categories that are specifically contemplated in the president's executive order. Those that are here on temporary status, like a student visa. You have two grad students from foreign countries come here, have a baby. That baby's not a citizen. Not under the 14th Amendment and clearly established not under the executive order that was issued yesterday. And also consistent with Congressman Babin from Texas, he has legislation that he just reintroduced. And he has an Indian tribe in his district. I actually talked to his legislative director yesterday to confirm. But again, Congress can act. Congress has acted in the past regarding tribal members and regarding Puerto Ricans, but they've never acted regarding the children of illegal aliens. And so what happens is you have a phenomenon called anchor babies. And this is where a woman who's pregnant comes across the border either legally or illegally and has a baby, and poof, that 21 years later, that's their immigration sponsor to sponsor the whole family back into the United States. That child of an illegal alien is not a citizen. It's not a citizen under current Supreme Court law. And all the executive order does is force the government to follow the law. And it's not taking away anybody's rights. It's also the way it's drafted, it's entirely prospective. It says this doesn't take effect for 30 days. So it only, as written, impacts babies that are born 30 days from now and further. So, but I was in line at the inaugural ball. I went to the Liberty Ball, and there was a bunch of Border Patrol agents from the Rio Grande sector in front of me, and we were talking about it, and they basically have to have maternity folks available at a moment's notice because all the time women will float across the river and have a baby on the banks of the Rio Grande on the assumption that 21 years later that's their anchor baby immigration sponsor. And that's fraud. That's not what the system is designed to do. And separate apart from all the fraudulent asylum claims, and we can talk about that at a different time. But here you have people who are gaming the system specifically to have a baby born in the U.S. simply because there was no law passed, there was no regulation passed. It just sometime, I believe it was during the Johnson administration, the State Department just started issuing passports to people with U.S. birth certificates and just decided that if you had a U.S. birth certificate, you were a U.S. citizen, and that wasn't the law. So contrary to what these 22 state attorney generals are saying, and contrary to what the knuckleheads of the ACLU are saying, I usually refer to them as the anti-Christian litigation union, but they basically are going to, they're going to make their arguments, they'll wave their hands, but the law is clear. The Supreme Court has spoken. And in response to those Supreme Court cases, or subsequent to those Supreme Court cases, Congress has acted not once, but twice, to make certain categories of people that, although they may be born within the territory of the United States, they were not previously citizens. Congress acted to make them citizens. Congress can act to make any category of group, of non-citizen citizens if Congress chooses to do so. If they're born in the United States but not under the complete jurisdiction thereof, well, Congress can amend that. Congress can change that. By expanding what the definition or adjusting the definition of what complete jurisdiction means. But they haven't in the case of illegal aliens.
Right. So this is in Congress's hands, as you point out. So the 14th Amendment, being born in the United States, doesn't automatically confer citizenship under the 14th Amendment. And what's crucial, of course, to your point, is that the parents' citizenship status is crucial. So if you float across the Rio Grande and have a baby on the banks down there, that doesn't matter. But they've been handing out passports like candy. And we've had friends, actually, from Switzerland who are here working. Their two children are Swiss, and they had their third baby in America, and they didn't want a U.S. citizenship for their son. But the government just, like, sent them, you know, immediately sent them, and he has to wait till he's 18 years old to basically revoke his passport, to basically say, no, I don't want to be an American citizen. So they're handing these things out, it seems like, candy.
Well, and it was a bureaucratic, it was the deep state bureaucrats of the Johnson administration who just decided to start doing it with no basis in law, no basis in statute, and they just did it. And again, it's the problem is not just once or twice, and it's not limited to the southern border. It's most pervasive at the southern border, but there are Asian women who fly in, you know, stay in a hotel in California in their eighth month, you know, and then, you know, basically game the system. But I posted a video about 5 years ago when I was running for the United States Senate, where in Columbus, New Mexico, every day, a whole bunch of state taxpayer-funded school buses will drive down to the border, to the border crossing, and 800, 900 kids will cross the border every morning because their parents had previously tricked Border Patrol into allowing the mom to give birth at the hospital in New Mexico rather than go to the hospital in Ciudad Juarez. It was all prearranged. There's a clinic down there that will give people notes that they can take to Border Patrol saying, hey, I'm in labor and it's going to take too long for me to get to Ciudad Juarez. Please let me do a humanitarian crossing and go have a baby in Deming. Well, sure enough, that they get access to all the free stuff in the U.S., even though they live in Mexico every single day. And the parents will rent a post office box in Columbus, New Mexico, merely to pretend like they're maintaining some sort of residency there. It's all, and it costs the taxpayers, millions of dollars every year. And it's clearly a fraud, and it could be shut down in a moment's notice. And this president shut it down, at least going forward. Now,
so
we can decide.
Do these 22 attorneys general have any case at all? And our second part of that question is, do you think Congress will codify what President Trump signed in his executive order?
Well, I had a chance to review Congressman Babin's legislation, and it's very solid, and it pretty much mirrors it, not word for word, but pretty closely mirrors what the president's executive order does. And I think they're on very solid ground. So if you have a judge who's going to follow the law, and it's always interesting, every time the left files suit against Trump, they're always talking about the rule of law. Well, that's only if they win.
Right.
And, they're not interested in the rule of law if the rule of law actually says they're wrong. As I say, if it wasn't for double standards, the radical left would have no standards at all. And so the cases, if they follow the law, if they look at the two precedents, if they look at the purpose of the 14th Amendment, the purpose of the 14th Amendment was to make sure that the states could not deny citizenship to black folks who had, who had previously been slaves. They were freed, and the 14th Amendment basically says that they get the citizenship. And so, there's a whole category of black folks that are tribal members because they were freed slaves within the Indian reservations, and they're called freedmen. And in the Treaty of 1866 with my tribe, those folks were given a choice. You could either be a tribal citizen and stay with the tribe, or you could be a U.S. citizen and leave the tribe, but you couldn't do both. And so, you know, consistently, post-14th Amendment, there was this notion that you were either under the jurisdiction of the United States or you're under the jurisdiction of the Choctaw Nation, for example, or the Cherokee Nation, or the Chickasaw Nation, the Creek Nation, the Seminole Nation, or any of the tribes that had these post-Civil War treaties. So the jurisprudence is solid. These 22 state attorney generals, they're just virtue signaling, doing their lawsuit because they assume that, you know, they want all these anchor babies to sponsor all these families that they assume will vote for, you know, vote blue. Right. And, you know, there's a solution to this. You know, and I'm a retired school teacher. I've had many Dreamer students, and, you know, and I'm not, you know, without taking a specific position on what should be done, there is a possibility, because a lot of these folks, they're just looking here to come get economic opportunity to feed their families. You can't blame somebody for wanting to take care of their own family. But they, you know, they're not interested in rigging elections or adjusting, you know, voting demographics. They just want to feed their kids, feed their families. So one possibility I've heard floated around is the notion that you can have a nationality be separate from citizenship. So you could have somebody, as long as they're not going to be on public assistance, as long as they're going to be providing positive economic contribution to the American economy, you can put them in a category where they can stay here. And as you know, as long as they've never committed a crime and they're not on public assistance and they are contributing to the American economy, great. But they can't vote. But of course, the radical left never wants that, because for them, this is not about actually taking care of anybody. This is all about trying to adjust voting demographics because their policies suck, and they think the only way they could do it is bringing in people who want to get all the free stuff.
Gavin, I'll get you out of here on this, and you've been gracious with your time. Right now, as it stands today, under this executive order, this is the law. This is the law of the land. These lawsuits by these 22 states could drag on for years. So, but as of today, as I'm talking to you on this Wednesday, right now, there is no birthright citizenship for people whose parents are not citizens of the United States. Is that right?
Well, it starts 30 days from yesterday. So in 29 days, a baby born to the parents of illegal aliens will not be a citizen, or will not be able to be provided citizenship documentation by the federal government. It does not take away, you know, people who are claiming U.S. citizenship now, that's a different question. But this is an executive order directing the federal government not to issue documents and not to recognize any documents from states demonstrating, you know, or arguing for citizenship for people whose parents were either not here legally or were only here temporarily when they were born. And it's not, so it's the executive order and Congressman Babin's legislation don't go change anything retroactively. They're just saying it stops now, or it stops in 29 days.
Amazing.
So, you know, it January 20th. So I guess that would be, you know, I assume, you know, 30 days. So it won't be February 20th because you got a few extra days in January. So it'd be like by February 17th or so, you know, there will be no more anchor babies in the United States.
Amazing. I can't believe we're living in these times right now. Gavin, yeah, great to see you.
Yeah. If people want to see the video that I reposted it on my Twitter page, that's at Dr. Gavin Clarkson, at DrGavinClarkson. I reposted the video. It got almost a million hits and like 16,000 shares, you know, the last time I posted it. So, but it basically, it's me sitting on the border watching the buses pick up all the anchor babies going to school at U.S. taxpayer expense for people who are paying zero property taxes and actually don't even live in the U.S. And it's still going on this morning.
Unbelievable. Well, hopefully but this at least, madness ends. You know,
The first thing you do when you find yourself at the bottom of a hole is stop digging. So the thing, you know, thank you, President Trump, for stopping the digging, because we won't have any more anchor babies at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Gavin Clarkson, thank you so much for jumping in here and talking about this with us, because, you know, it'd be interesting to track these lawsuits and see where they go. But 30 days from now, great to see you, doctor. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me on. And thanks again to President Trump for stopping this fraud once and for all.
Hallelujah. Thanks.
It's going to be a battle. It's going to be a SCOTUS battle. We're going to get what we don't normally get is a constitutional interpretation of something that's really important. So
I think he's right, though. I mean, speaking as a, you know, Native American, I mean, you know, it's the laws changed under Congress in 1924. So, you know, Congress has the power to codify this, and we'll see if they do that. So interesting. We'll be watching this story closely. In the meantime, though, in 30 days, shut down. No more birthright citizenship. So, all right. We've got more news to get to in just a moment.
That's right. And we're going to talk to Maxime Bernier coming up. He is a candidate for the People's Party in Canada. He says he's been removed from the debate stage. Does that sound familiar? Clayton, you ever heard of that happening to a politician before?
Yeah.
Just as his party gains popularity in Canada, as their government is shut down, as Justin Trudeau says he is resigning. So he's going to join us to explain what's happening there and how you can help him get back on that debate stage, if that's a possibility, because he does have a petition. But before we do that, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because, of course, the average person is finding it difficult to pay their expenses every month, and in most cases, there's nothing left to cover the extra. Most people aren't getting a big raise. Expenses are up. The CPI, Consumer Price Index, is up. Inflation is still rising. So if you're a homeowner and you're frustrated with this cycle, then you can take 10 minutes and make a no-obligation call to our friends over at American Financing. If you're constantly carrying a credit card balance each and every month with a rate in the 20s or 30s, then American Financing can show you how to put your hard-earned equity to work and get you out of debt. You can leverage what you've got to trade out bad debt for good debt. American Financing has salary-based mortgage consultants that are saving their customers an average of $800 a month. And if you get started today, you may even be able to delay two mortgage payments. There's no upfront fees, and so it costs nothing to just learn this. Figure out how you can save yourself every month from getting into consumer debt. Call them today at 866-890-8434 or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. One more time, that's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Maxime Bernier is running to replace Justin Trudeau as Prime Minister in Canada. He says he's facing opposition for his candidacy being kept off debate stages. Does that sound familiar? Like RFK Jr., Bernie Sanders, he's getting that treatment, which means he must have something that the establishment does not want to hear. He was on Redacted last month to tell us about his candidacy, but since then, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has resigned. He joins us again to discuss the state of his campaign in Canada, whether the Canadian government is running now in the absence of Justin Trudeau's leadership, and how Canada now feels about the U.S. under President Trump. Thank you so much for joining us again. It's a pleasure to speak with you again, sir.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be with you.
So recently you posted an update on your X account saying that you are being kept from the debate stage because of technicalities. Can you explain that to us? Because as Americans, that's very familiar to us. We saw RFK Jr. not able to participate in debates under the incumbent Democratic Party. So tell us what's happening and explain what they're saying to keep you from the Canadian people.
Yes, shortly for your American audience. We created the People's Party in 2018. In 2019, I was able to participate in the national debates. And in 2021, our last general election in Canada, they told us that we need to meet one of two criteria to be able to participate in the debate. One was to have 4% of the vote at the last general election, the previous election. We didn't have that. We started the party. We had only 1.6% of the vote. The second one was to be at 4% in the polls 28 days before the election. And for that, they said that they're going to use an average of all the polls. So at that time, I was at 4.5% in the polls across the country, across Canada. But they took a poll that was giving me only 1%. My average went down to 3.2. And they said, Bernie, you cannot participate in that debate. Remember, in 2021, I was the only national politician in Canada that was speaking against the COVID hysteria and all these mandates. So I received a call a couple of months ago from the Leaders Debate Commission, from the civil servant, and they said, Bernier, we want to have a meeting with you because we need to know what kind of debate you looked at, what would be the process for the next debate. We are having interview with every leader. I said, perfect. And they said, we're going to keep the criteria. You add 4% of the vote at the previous election. Yes, in 2021, we had 5% of the vote. So they said, you'll be in the debate. But last week, they issued their new rule, and they said now, Bernier, you need to, the 4% of the previous election is not there anymore. And so there's a new criteria, the one that I must have 4% in the polls 28 days before the election. And I know they're going to take an average. And I know that they can play with that like they did at the last election. So they are changing the criteria every time to be sure that the People's Party won't be there. You know, it's undemocratic. And we had 840,000 Canadians who voted for us at the last election. That's a censorship. They are censoring these people. They don't want their voice, the voice of the People's Party, to be at the debate, because we are not a globalist political party. We are a populist party, and our ideas are, you know, just right for Canadians, but not for these establishment political leaders.
But a poll is what demographers call a cross-section. It is a snapshot of a political temperance at one time. And so how are we to have any confidence on any given cross-sectional temperature of the Canadian people, given that your government is in free fall? Your prime minister has resigned. Your government is at a pause button. How can they not understand that we need a variety of voices, especially at a moment like this? That seems to me painfully obvious.
Yeah, but on the board, you must know that on the board of that Leaders Debate Commission, there's former politicians coming from these establishment political parties like the Conservative Party of Canada. And so for them, they don't want us. They don't want us to be there to question their position. They're afraid about what we must say. And they know that if we have that visibility, we will grow faster, but they don't want that. So, you know, the 4%, and you're right about polls. Right now in Canada, we are maybe about 4-5% in the polls, but I don't have any visibility. I think that we will be able to double our score at the next election. But that being said, we need to have more visibility. And it's like, yeah, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and all these politicians in the U.S. who were canceled by the mainstream media and were not able to participate in national debates. So it's sad for the democracy in our country. And, you know, if people want to help us, they can sign a petition. And we have more than 10,000 people who signed that in 24 hours. So we're going to put more pressure on the debates commissions. But there's no appeal to their decision. So that's why we need people, Canadians, to help us to be part of the debate.
Right. And so do you think now that the establishment is pushing for a Pierre Poilievre candidacy, even though they were initially against him because the media in Canada is so pro-Trudeau, but now that it's inevitable that he will no longer take office, does it seem like they just want these two establishment candidates, these two parties, and that's it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In Canada, you know, you have usually 9 years of the Liberals, and after that, 9 years of the Conservative, 9 years of the Liberals, and it's always the same. So like you in U.S., Democrat and Republican, but now you have a new Republican Party with Trump, and that is not the Republican Party of 10 years ago. So that's a big change, and we saw that Monday. That was a great day for you in America, but that was a great day also for us in Canada.
And so if we take Donald Trump as a template, who may be considered more aligned with, I don't know, we can't call him an establishment Republican by any means. He went to libertarians and said, I represent you. Let's make a deal. They didn't actually buy it, but they didn't oppose him. Is there a path for you to become a non-establishment conservative, or are you committed to this third party?
Yeah, in the Conservative Party of Canada, there's no voice for, you know, a guy like me. I was with them. I was a minister under the upper government. So for me, there's no returning in the Conservative Party. They're conservative in name only. They are afraid to speak about real conservative values. That's why we created the People's Party. And we are a proud populist party that is putting our country first, like President Trump is doing in the U.S.
And so do you feel like there is definitely a temperature for your party, but there are politically homeless people who don't know that you're waiting for them with open arms?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the future will be great for us. I'm looking at everything that is happening in other Western countries, in France, in UK, in US. You know, populist movements are rising, and that will be the same for us. I'm traveling across the country right now, meeting a lot of people. I'm doing a great campaign on social media. Here in Canada, we may be in election this spring, or at least in October 2025. That will happen, and this election will be a great one for us. The populist voice may be in parliament after that election.
Yes, I watch you on X. My viewers can too, at Maxime Bernier, and no one can say that you're not pounding the pavement to raise awareness about your cause. You're working hard. I can see that. Tell us a little bit more about the Canadian temperature about a new incoming Trump administration. Do you think Canadians are legitimately worried about American expansion? Or do you think that they're watching with eyes wide open to see if America can actually secure its borders, bring down crime rates, and bring down prices for American consumers? What do you think what are you hearing on the campaign trail?
But what I'm hearing from the establishment politicians and the Trudeau, the Liberals, the Conservatives, they're ready to have a trade war with US. They're afraid of the 25% tariffs, but the population is not. The population understands that Trump is a good negotiator, and what he wants is for us to secure our borders. But these main establishment political parties don't want to speak about that. They don't want to secure our border. They don't want to deport all of the illegals that we have in our country. They're not speaking about that. I'm the only one. So if we want to have a good deal with the US, with President Trump, it's very easy. You secure your borders, deport the illegals, moratorium on immigration, reinvest in your defense. And, you know, we are a threat to the national security of the US, and we are a threat to the national security of Canadians also and Canada. So, for example, the last 3 years, the US authority stopped about 400 400 terror suspects at the border of the US, and 80% of them were coming from Canada. And last year, they arrested more than 200,000 illegals crossing the border from Canada to the U.S. So we need to solve that. But at the political level in Canada, with these politicians, they're afraid. They don't want to do that. That's the only solution if we can have, and if we want to have a good deal with President Trump. So what I'm hearing across the country, people are very happy that we have Trump right now as a president. For a lot of reasons, free speech is important. Free speech on social media, the gender ideology, everything that he did yesterday was great for them, America. But it is in line with our electoral platform, the electoral platform of the People's Party of Canada. So that's why I think that the next election for us will be a good one.
So, do you think that is a major reason that Trudeau resigned? I never asked you because it happened after we spoke. What do you think are the reasons that Trudeau finally threw in the towel? Because he has said many times he wouldn't. It was maybe surprising, but not surprising.
Yeah, the pressure was coming from the establishment of his party. They want to stay in power. They know that with him that it will have been impossible. So what they're doing, and also the MPs elected, they wanted a new leader. The pressure was there. So now there's a leadership contest with the Liberal Party. But it will be the same. You know, they have two candidates, Mark Carney and the former finance minister Freeland. One of them will win, but it will be the same leftist politics coming from the Liberal Party. So there's no change over there. But Trudeau just resigned because the reality was in his face. And if you look at the polls in Canada, the Liberal Party is not that popular under with Justin Trudeau as a leader, but also the other leader that will be elected won't change anything.
Right. You had a post on X on the 21st, that was on Tuesday of this week, about the 10 tenets that the Trump administration has put into place that you think most Canadians stand for, that you, in fact, also stand for, protecting free speech, ending DEI, refusing asylum and illegal border crossings, ending the WHO, which you had said to us on Redacted, you would never sign the pandemic treaty and other UN agreements. So I encourage our viewers to look out for that. So as they're reviewing your policies and becoming familiar with your candidacy, where can they sign the petition to get you on the debate stage?
They can go on our website, peoplespartyofcanada.ca. The petition is over there, and I'll keep you informed, and I'll do everything. I will have a meeting with a couple of lawyers this week just to be sure if we can do something legally, and we'll do everything, because it's so important that our voice and that voice be at the debate here in Canada during the next election.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to speak to you again, sir. Please come back on Redacted.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
That's going to do it for us today on Redacted, and we will be back tomorrow because it's Wednesday. It's only Wednesday. It's been a strange week because of the MLK holiday and the inauguration. I keep thinking it's Friday. It's not. We're back to work tomorrow, so be here because we will be live. Remember, we're here every day, Monday through Thursday, and on the days we broadcast, you also can receive the free Redacted newsletter. If you head on over to redacted.inc and click the button that says receive the newsletter, all you have to do is put in your email address, and you get it every day that we publish this show and go live for free. That's Monday through Thursday. And when I say free, I mean free. We do not upsell you. There's nothing behind a paywall. It's just something that we want you to have so you know the stories we're watching and following, and you have links to original source material. I try really hard to make sure that there are hyperlinks to everything so that you can read for yourself. It's important to us that everybody is freely educated and has their free opinions on this show. So please subscribe to the newsletter. Please come back tomorrow. We'll see you then, everybody. Thanks for being here today.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.